Oh, you reconsidered?
I am.
I don't know. I thought it was a pretty radical choice that you came and you were like, my arms are out. I'm fucking doing this.
That's what I'm talking about.
The yoga ain't for no sissies.
Yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the most high show. I am your host, Reverend Christian Jansen. With me in the building is David Ja.
Yo.
Cleope. And Kale's on the ones and twos. Leslie's doing quality control.
Thank you.
And
Leslie,
our guest today is Katie.
Hello.
Katie began practicing yoga way back in 2005.
Way back then?
Yeah.
Way back then.
Way back then. 2005, boy, I was on one. And has been deepening her knowledge and spiritual journey ever since. We're going to get into that.
Awesome.
She has completed 200-hour and a 300-hour certification through Yoga Alliance in Atlanta.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
That's not a small feat. That's a lot of hours.
Right. Yes.
She currently holds an ERYT 500
yes
certification.
Yep.
You're going to explain that
too. Break that down. It's a lot of letters.
Now, she also has some other stuff that she does, but we might get into that. We might not. But she also has an approach to teaching yoga, which is using breath, movement, posture alignment to help students come to a place of complete awareness with oneself internally and externally.
Oh, man. That's
welcome, Katie, to the most.
All right, Katie.
Welcome to the Most High Show, a show about recovery, spirituality, and all that. Produced, posted, and hosted by people in recovery who have strength and hope and want to share it with you. If you or someone you love is suffering, we want you to know you are not alone. This is the Most High Show.
Katie, you don't give off yoga instructor vibes.
Really?
Not at all.
Really?
No. You give off shopping at the mall vibes.
Which I do like to do that too.
I can go with that.
But I think that's what I like, because I think, oh, there's a lot more going on here than meets the eye. Mm. Yeah. So what happened in 2005 that got you into yoga?
So, well, first off, I have gotten that before where I have like a business side and people are, you know, surprised that I'm a yoga instructor. But then in the yoga world, people are surprised I'm in the business world. So
it's
two different sides. So
now, do you like that or does that bother you?
I love it.
You like that?
Yes. I mean, when I'm in my yoga world, it's just I'm free. I'm, you know, that's kind of the essence of who I am. But because I, you know, work full time and I'm in the kind of corporate world, it feeds that other part of me too.
Sure. I can see that.
And I am a girly girl and I do like shopping and I'm not going to lie about it. So in college, my ex-husband, boyfriend at the time, we met at the end of college. We sold everything we owned and we moved to Hawaii.
Yes.
We moved to, it was great. We moved to a really small island called Lanai. It was 13 by 18 miles big. So for me, it was not what I pictured Hawaii to be like. So I was in culture shock. I really wasn't happy on the island.
Mm.
And there wasn't much to do besides party.
Mm.
But there was a little temple at the top of the island, and they offered free yoga classes. So, you know, we are fresh out of college. We just sold everything. We were broke. So we thought, well, it's free. Yoga sounds cool. Let's do it. And it was really small. You know, my mom was scared. Oh, you're in a Buddha temple. Like, you know, it wasn't like that. And I enjoyed it. And at first it was just a physical thing. It was just something to do, but it surprised me. And I started going every week and it was something that I looked forward to. And then it evolved from there. But what brought me to it was honestly convenience. And, you know, I look back now and it's probably deeper than that. You know, we're brought to things in our life for a reason at the time we're supposed to be there. So I was supposed to be on that island and it kept me grounded there. And then we moved to Maui and it just deepened and evolved every year since then.
Yeah. Well, I love that that story of that because I've had a friend who told me that, you know, these things, these spiritual things, mm-hmm. there's a natural flow to life or to spirit, right? Mm-hmm. And that you don't have to force it.
Right.
Right? And so here you are on this island, not having to force something that ends up becoming an integral part of your life, right?
Right.
Yeah, that's pretty, because I think a lot of people think the spiritual journey is a lot about striving, doing, you know.
Accomplishing.
Right.
Like instead noticing. Of,
yeah.
All that.
Right. Instead of just opening up yourself and letting it flow.
Well, it could be as easy as it was all there was to do on this little itty bitty island. So we tried it out and it ended up becoming something.
Right. It deep, wasn't something, you know. I mean, Instagram wasn't the thing then, but it wasn't something I was told to do or it wasn't something that yeah. everybody else was doing. So I was doing it. It was just something that happened.
And so now your exposure though to, I'm imagining a temple at the top of a mountain, you know, in Hawaii Island, it being more of a sacred yoga practice.
Yes.
Right?
Correct. It wasn't a fitness yoga class. It was
very spiritual.
It was very, almost, probably. It was very gentle. It wasn't, there was no spiritual specifics put pressure on us, but mm-hmm. it was a very just safe place. It was very small and it was in a temple. It was, we really just, I think there was maybe five of us that went every week and it was spiritual in a way that evolved naturally, not in a way that was forced, if yeah. that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Sacred.
Correct. And we weren't, we were in a temple, but there was no teachings of that specific yeah. practice.
Oh, okay, I understand.
Yeah.
So you moved to this to the Big Island.
We're good.
Mm-hmm. You moved to the Big Island, and you continue in this practice. But when does it switch for you that this is something I'm going to pursue, mm-hmm. And it's something that I want to, because becoming a teacher is like you're becoming a part of this thing.
Right.
When did that switch happen?
So when we moved to Maui, I started to get more involved with yoga. And then when we moved back to the mainland, we moved to Minneapolis. And
whoa, that's a switch.
I know. Don't ever do that, by the way. Never do that. I don't have many regrets in life, but, and I was miserable. You know, my fiance, he was gone playing on a golf tour. I was miserable, and it was something that kept me sane at the time. So I started practicing more. I just was practicing more. Never thought I'd be a teacher. And then we moved to Atlanta the week after we got married, and I started practicing even more here. Mm. And it was just part of my life practicing until I started to become, you know, friends with the teachers, and it was suggested, why don't you become a teacher? And I thought there was so much fear. I'm like, no, I can't do that. I can't teach people. And my husband at the time, he's like, you have to do this. So and everything worked out as it should. I thought, I can't afford this. I don't know how this is going to work. And everything fell into place. It was definitely the path I was supposed to take. So I started my teacher training here in Atlanta at Peachtree Yoga. And it was a very peel the onion. It wasn't a fitness. It wasn't just, here, go get, you know, teach people how to work out. Mm-hmm. It was a lot of philosophy, meditation, pranayama. And that's when I started to kind of shed some layers of myself,
yeah,
which I thought I was peeling the onion. I now realize that it was only the beginning.
Wow.
Yeah. So.
So
I guess that transition is, yeah, it really turns into, now this is a legitimate spiritual practice that I'm involved
exactly.
with.
Exactly. Right? And yeah, something shifted. So I remember sitting with Graham and he was saying that meditation was part of the program. And I told him, I can't do that. I'm mm-hmm. sorry. I take Xanax and that's what I do. And
meditation. I got great meditation. Okay. It's been prescribed to me for a while now.
But that is the truth. That is what I told him. I'm like, I take Xanax, so I can't sit still and meditate. So, and he was really patient with me, and I did meditate. I stopped taking Xanax by the end of the program.
And wow.
For a good bit, and we'll probably get to that later. Mm-hmm. But it evolved my awareness of myself, energetically mostly. Mm. I knew I always had this kind of, I did energy stuff in Hawaii. I knew I was always prone to that. I was always attracted to that, but I didn't really know a lot about it in my own self. Like I couldn't be aware of my own self.
Like no self stuff. You're gaining knowledge of it, mm-hmm. but you're not internalizing it.
Yeah, I'm not understanding me. I'm just focusing it externally.
Yeah, well, that's where you get to when you talk about practicing,
mm-hmm.
right?
Like, yes.
I think of the that's kind of like a very American thing is to just learn. If I know the right information, mm-hmm. then I will be the thing I want to be, right? Yeah. As mm-hmm. opposed to...
I've researched it.
Yeah, right. Or read books on it.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
And which is great. Like, mm-hmm. like head knowledge can really take you, but it can't take you all the way.
Right.
And so there has to be a practice, a living out of whatever the thing is.
Yes.
There has to be an embodiment of it. Or like some people might say, you take it from your head into your heart, mm-hmm. right? And you got to let it settle.
Yeah.
Right. And there's this teacher, Rob Bell. I don't know if you have heard of him, but he did this teaching on communication called Something to Say. Mm. And he said that one of the main things is to let things settle from your head to your heart before mm-hmm. you start to teach it. Because a lot of people get excited. You read a book.
You get ready to go.
On quantum physics.
You memorize it.
And you're like, this quantum physics shit's amazing. And you start rapping about quantum physics. And then someone goes, but what about? And you go, oh, I don't know about that.
Right.
Because it hasn't settled. Because you haven't practiced it and lived it and embodied it.
Right.
You've
right.
just gained enough to give a speech about it.
Yes.
And sound really smart about it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, when you're first starting out as a teacher, it is that way. But I was very grateful to have the training I did to encompass all of it, not just learning how to say the words, learning the physical practice, because it helped me. I've rarely planned a class when I'm teaching because I have to feel and understand what's happening in that room with that person. We're all different. We're all different from day to day.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've been practicing yoga since, you know, whatever, 20, 30, I don't know how long, long time.
Oh, so what you're saying is you're getting the vibe of the room before you even start. That's what Christian does with his group therapy.
Right. Mm. And you know, it's still a practice for me.
Yeah.
It's not like now I got it. Now I'm done. I'm good with yoga. It's always evolving, right? Different things are happening in our body energetically, mentally, emotionally, physically.
Sure.
So it's ever evolving, and the key thing is awareness and like connection to yourself, and that it's very powerful.
Yeah. So let's go back to zoom into this moment where it begins to be something that you're practicing. In my experience, there's usually some kind of driving force, negative force or opposite force that pushes us towards doing kind of spiritual work.
Mm-hmm.
What was happening in your life that was diving you into it? And then what, like, because you mentioned a couple words like priyama or something like
pranayama.
That. What was pranayama? Yes. So what was happening? You know, because I really don't know much about it other than, you know, I had an addictionologist say, get into this pose when you're freaking out because mm-hmm. it'll help you to your body to know that you're not in danger.
Right.
Right. So just can you zoom in a little bit to that time with yoga and what was getting solved mm-hmm. from being there and then what was really beginning to open up?
So I think I have battled with anxiety and that. I wasn't in my body. I was always worrying. I was always anxious. Mm. And when I started to really practice yoga, things started to settle. I didn't have to take Xanax every day, but I started to really, you know, that's a great question. I started to really feel my own energy and learn how to use the tools to tap into that awareness. and understand how to, you know, we're all going to get anxious. We're all going to have all the feelings. But I was starting to understand how to feel that. You know, that took a different path later in life, and I came back to it now. But I was starting to understand it, and it something happened where I felt when I was teaching, and I wish I could put it in a word, but it feels like I'm doing exactly what I'm supposed to be doing. Wow. It feels like it fills my cup so much. You know, I'm a natural introvert where I love people, but I recharge alone.
Yeah.
But teaching yoga, having somebody come in and you can tell they're all in their head.
Yeah.
They're not in their body. They're in their head. They're worried. They're scared. They're sad. All the things. But then at the end of class, the face, their energy is like present. It is such a gift. And I fell in love with it immediately when I started teaching. I felt comfortable. I felt like me. Like I was giving part of what I really wanted to give to others.
Performing a real service.
Yeah, and for me,
like authentic, your most authentic self.
Exactly.
At the time, yeah.
And it wasn't about, I don't care if you can touch your toes. I don't care if you can be a pretzel. It was the gift of seeing people get into their bodies and feel their bodies and feel their energy is so healing, and watching that is amazing.
So powerful.
If you're to break down what yoga is, right?
There is a lot of mystery in yoga, right? And it's there's controversy. I mean, there's a lot to yoga. I don't do it consistently at all, but I love it. I love doing it with my daughter. I mean, we'll do like a little YouTube thing.
Yeah.
And, you know, sometimes, you know, both of my kids would be there and we'll practice. Just the whole vibe of it.
Mm-hmm.
I love it from beginning to end. I wish I would do it more often, but there is a lot of, like, you tell some Christians, oh, I'm doing yoga, right?
Oh, yeah. Right. Yeah, yeah.
Hey, no. You see, whenever you sit like this, you know what that means, right?
Right.
Like, well, you know, and they think it's like, they give us this extra, I don't know, nothing. I don't know, man.
Right.
They make it this religious thing.
Well,
and maybe it is.
I think there's different
know.
Expressions of it. I think there's like the expression of this fitness side of it, right?
Right.
We're kind of, which is so freaking American. Let's pull out anything that is ancient and like about this, let's just use it for what its utility is only.
Right.
But hey, that works, right? And how many people are getting help, right? And
and
it's better than, you know, getting blasted behind the freaking Dairy Queen.
but like, you know, you hear a yogi talk about somebody practicing in that manner,
right?
Then they're like, yo, they're not even getting it.
So how do you break it down to a couple, you know, goobers
less
here?
Than novice?
What's the magic behind it?
Well, just how would you explain it to, you know, at least in your expression of it, how would you explain it if to somebody who really doesn't know?
So there is the physical, there's different elements to it. There is the physical element, right? So you're physically moving your body, you're opening up energy sources, you're getting blood flowing, you're...
See, right there, opening up energy sources.
Yes.
What's that mean?
So basically, we store different things in different areas of our body. So, for example, we store a lot of stuff in our hips. Emotions, traumas, things like that.
All my rhythm.
It gets stuck. Yeah. It gets stuck in different parts of our body. When we're moving into the, like, you know, when we're opening up hips, sometimes people get emotional.
Yeah.
Right? You're twisting, you're detoxing. It's a detoxing effect. And so you're opening up and letting the energy flow through your body and getting oxygen in your blood. And, you know, there's calming effects. I'm not a doctor, but, you know, there's a lot of science behind how it's helpful physically for the body. And then, so there's the physical side. And, you know, in yoga, we work with the chakra system, right?
Okay.
So balancing out the chakra system is... there's different elements to the practice. Mm-hmm. There's different, you know, we start in certain ways and we end in certain ways. And then at the end, we lie there in Shavasana. Why do we do that? We take space to allow that to absorb in our body, right? We take the space. Mm-hmm. There's the mental part where we're bringing awareness into our body. We're becoming present with our body. And that is one thing we don't do. It's a daily practice for every yogi, every person, yeah, right? But it brings us to that space where, you know, an advanced yogi isn't, it doesn't matter if what pose they can do. There's yeah, nothing wrong with doing party poses, as you should say, right? There's nothing wrong. It could be fun and, you know, there's nothing wrong with that, but becoming so aware and getting into your own self when you're practicing is the work.
I think that, like, I mean, from just listening to how you're explaining it, I would imagine getting the part where you get to know your true self, it was probably the most impactful to you. You were taking Xanax, right? You're taking benzos, and then you start practicing yoga, and within the practice, you learn about yourself so much so that, mm-hmm, you know, you don't feel the need to take a very addictive drug, you know, for, you know, anxiety.
Yeah, I was partying all the time. Yeah. And that was what I did. And when I was deep into my yoga practice and I was very dedicated to that, I wasn't fully sober, right? Mm-hmm. But I didn't drink as much. It was a more normal way of life. Mm-hmm. Well, compared to what I was doing.
Right.
And when I did, because I was aware of my body and my energy and how I felt, when I did get drunk or high or, you know, whatever, I didn't like being in my body.
Yeah.
I didn't feel good. I didn't want to sit there. I didn't want to do yoga. And I loved doing yoga. So I didn't want to do the things that made me feel bad.
Right. Yeah. So you talk about this energy moving.
Yes.
All right. And the chakra. So I'm using you as like a translator, right?
Okay.
Like translate that. Like you're talking about this energy, right? Because you're talking about like a metaphysical kind of thing, mm-hmm, right? So storing trauma in the body, right? Like you said, there's a scientific, right?
Yes.
Element to that.
Yes.
But you also kind of talked about this energy that moves. Mm-hmm. So what would you describe it? What is that energy?
So, and you both have done yoga, right?
Mm-hmm.
So for example, when you're done doing yoga, you feel a little more open, right?
Yes.
And so the energy sources that we're talking about, they go physically along the spine, but they're all over the body, you know, but the main chakras are along the spine. So, you know, the lower chakras are, you know, they hold a lot of our younger years, our foundation, right? Mm-hmm. So when we're opening up our hips and we're opening up those spaces, things get stuck and we're opening up those. Maybe, let me know if I'm not explaining this correctly or clearly.
No, I like where you're going.
I like it.
You know, people find that when they start to do yoga, that especially if they haven't really understood or expressed their emotions, a lot can come up. And that's very normal. It can be anger, it can be sadness, it can be all kinds of stuff. But it's moving. Your body is moving through, you know, our heart space is, you know, we can feel when my heart hurts. Mm. Right. Mm-hmm. And you know, the throat chakra, for example, I struggled with that for a long time of not finding my voice, literally not projecting my voice. Mm-hmm. And I did some work around that actually just in the past year with, opening up those spaces, you know, and like the space between the eyebrows, the wisdom, our truth, trusting ourselves. There's all these different elements to these that can translate into our daily lives. And when we're doing yoga, we're we're in positions that we're not normally in our day to day, right? Mm-hmm. Our normal positions in daily life is, let's shut it down, right? We're sitting, we're kind of like this. We're not moving, we're not open. So things, I mean, of course they're going to get stuck.
Yeah.
And however you want to look at it, but you can feel the energy opening up and the energy moving when you're doing these practices.
So it's like the body postures, you know, depending on what part of the body you're stretching or moving, is opening up these different areas of chakras that can, like, you know, make you feel young again, make you feel more focused. Am I wrong?
Or? Well, yeah. Like, for example, if we work through the whole body in most yoga classes, but let's say we're doing a heart opener, right?
Yeah.
It can create a vulnerable feeling at the time.
Yeah.
Right. So
I love that. So the physical posture, a physical movement, creates some sort of emotional or psychological effect.
Yes.
It's like an opening of it. Yeah. Because we've been so enclosed.
And I ain't practiced yoga then.
Yeah.
Because that shit ain't never happened to me.
But it may not happen at first.
Well, but I understand what you mean about, like, the trauma being stored in the body.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Right? I have had experience with that.
Mm-hmm.
So that makes, like, there's nothing, like, there's, like, you know, if it's true, it's true, it's true. Mm-hmm. Right? Like, even though I don't quite understand what this energy thing is, and I've had chakras explained to me several times, and I still don't quite get what chakras are, but there's something about it as you're explaining it that kind of goes, it rings true. It's like, it makes sense. So there's physical positions that create some sort of psychological and emotional shift.
Yes. And again, it's a practice. So it's like anything, being open to it, and it's not going to, if you go to one yoga class, it's not like, oh, I'm totally open. And
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
It's a evolving practice.
Yeah.
And it takes time and it changes and our bodies change. So, you know, if you go to a yoga class, you know, tomorrow and you're like, well, I don't know, I didn't feel any energetic shifts. it is something that it can depend on the class, and it also, it's something you just have to be open with, and in time, it is happening.
Yeah, I feel like your mindset would probably, because like for me, like just gaining the knowledge that you just gave me now, I feel like my perspective in going through it would be different. Like when I do yoga, and I don't do it a lot at all, but I'm always like, damn, I can't touch my freaking toes, man.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? I'm really trying to like get this move down. I cannot believe I can't turn my hips this far, or, you know, I'm looking at, you know, my kid, and all of us is like, you know what I mean? Yeah. And I'm not, my
you're
mindset.
You're only seeing the physical.
I'm only seeing physical. I'm embarrassed. My ego's running rampant whenever I'm doing it too. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So like my mindset, if I get this understanding, like just like you explained the chakras and like the purposeful meaning of it, then it kind of gives me like I feel like just because you said that, if I would go do yoga, I would come at it from a different perspective, you know?
Right. And it does start with most people, and it did with me, the physical, right?
Yeah.
And the ego plays a big part in it. I'm not good at yoga because I'm not flexible.
Right.
And frustration. They're looking at somebody over there. They're not in their body. They're looking at the person next to them and they're comparing. And we're all different.
Right.
And if you can start to let that go and just get into your body and feel your stretch, your edge, your how far you can go is going to be different than the person next to you. No matter what, every single person in that class is going to be different.
Just empty that out. That whole
empty it out.
Just empty that part of it out and you can go somewhere, I believe.
So when people say, I'm not good at yoga because I'm not flexible, especially men, and it just comes more common with men because men aren't, but naturally they are a little more like tight with their muscles.
Mm.
And that when you really become, there isn't like, oh, now I'm good. I passed the test. Right.
Right.
But the more you advance in your practice, the more you, when I go to yoga practice, I am in a bubble. I'm in a bubble. I don't really, unless I'm not understanding what she's saying, mm-hmm. like if she's doing something really funky, I'll look around. I'm in a bubble of what I'm feeling. I'm in my space.
Yeah.
And that is the practice. And that, again, is evolving. And some days I'm all over the place in my head and I'm just like, I'm not here. And but the more you evolve in these practices, these energetic practices, you know, physical practices, the more you can be in your body with awareness. That is the healing component. Mm-hmm. And that is what, you know, that's the work right there, you know, and that translates into so many different areas in your life off of the mat.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
You know,
this wasn't in my list of questions. So if I am hitting you with something, you know, but like, do you know where this chakra concept or framework, do you know where it originated? And
yeah, I mean, it's more of the, I believe it originated in India. I believe it's more of the, it's not Chinese medicine. Chinese medicine is, you know, acupuncture, the nadis, but it's still energy moving through the body. Mm-hmm. So it's all energy, right? Whether it's, you know, derived from India or the Chinese medicine or, but the yoga practice is, you know, and the philosophy originated in India.
It's like a Hindu.
Yeah, and honestly, the physical practice was to prepare the body to sit and meditate.
Ah.
It's like a warm-up to meditate?
Yeah. That's how
that it makes sense, too.
Way back in the day.
I get it.
That's why they did the yoga. You're opening up your body, right? Think about it. You're opening up. You're getting the energy flowing. You're physically preparing your body because sitting, you know, cross-legged is not comfortable for most. Mm-hmm. And unless you practice yoga. And yeah. That's what it was used for initially.
Yeah. And then they started realizing, oh, there's some things happening here.
Yeah, it evolved from there. But, you know, yoga, the physical practice, asana is what they call it. And then they would do pranayama, the breath work. And then the meditation. Yeah. And, you know, there's a lot more to it. But
would you suggest it in that order then, since it's all a warm up into? Yes. That's
when
it.
I used to teach down
that's
in.
It.
Yeah. When I used to teach down in Inman Park, the studio's not there anymore because of COVID. But we would teach 75 minutes of physical practice of asana. Mm-hmm. Then we would teach 10 minutes of whatever, 5-10 minutes of breath work. And then we would meditate every class. Because that's how
that sounds like medicine to me, boy.
Yeah, it was good.
Yeah.
Can I ask a question real quick?
Yeah.
It might be. Are you an alcoholic? Because we're not. You know what I mean? Sometimes we get into these and I'm like,
yeah,
I know the benzos thing. You know what I mean?
Yes.
So how did your active use of alcohol and benzos, how did that mesh with this knowledge that you're gaining and this practice of yoga? Like, how does that go? What is that?
Right. So there was a little bit of a cycle. So okay. Started drinking when I was 14, found love, it was love at first sight, and I didn't start taking pills till college. But anyway, party, party, party. That's what I did best. Mm. Party, drugs, all that in high school. And I just thought that's what you did. I grew up in Wisconsin, small town. Mm. That's what you did. And I kept projecting that way. And I didn't think it was an issue, but I knew I loved it. I knew I drank more than other people. Uh-huh. But I just thought that's just the way I was, which it was the way yeah. it was. But anyway, when I started to get deeper into my yoga practice, the drinking was there. It didn't go away.
Right.
But it got, I remember people saying, wow, you're drinking a lot less. And I was like, oh, yeah, I am. And I was like, yeah, I am. You know, I'm really proud of myself. Mm-hmm. And then it was good. It was good for, I don't know, 5 years, 6 years. But it was, drinking was still there. Like, I would do my training. The weekends I didn't do my training, I would party. Right. And I still drank every day. I mean, yeah. That was not a question. It was just
but
how
definitely
much I
a
drank.
Difference. Yeah,
it was like a glass or two. Sorry, it was a glass or two, not you know, party. So then things shifted in my life and I started to get away from my yoga practice a little bit. Mm-hmm. I had a baby, which is the blessing. I'm not, there's nothing, but I was a working mom. I had a baby. My husband was traveling. I wasn't balancing it. I wasn't using the tools that made me healthy. I was just in full fledged, like do.
Right.
So I started to use my little best friend alcohol as a way to de-stress because I didn't have time to meditate. I didn't have time to do anything else. But so I drank and it kind of, it skyrocketed from there.
Got heavy again.
Yes.
Yeah.
And pills, drinking, you know, Adderall during the day, drinking and Ambien at night. And that's just the way I lived. And I then had another baby. And that was COVID. And things were difficult for me that I didn't know how to cope with. I wasn't using my tools. I was gone. I was teaching up until 9 months pregnant with my first child. So I was still in, you know, a good place.
Yeah.
But when I lost those practices that brought me, that brought the awareness to myself, I was gone. I was using alcohol as my coping mechanism.
Yeah.
Strongly.
Yeah. You were synthesizing the connection and the peace that you were getting through the practice.
Yep.
So let me hear these substances. They're just going to, they like circumvent. It's a quick fix.
Yeah.
It's duct tape over the.
And it dulls your energy.
Yeah.
It dulls your energy. I mean, if I see someone drinking, if I know somebody and I know them sober and then I know them drinking, energy's just gone.
Totally different. Right.
Different. I mean, and it's not just the way they act. You can just tell it's gone.
Oh, yeah.
And
I saw a grown man the other night with flip-flops on, drunk. Couldn't even sit on a freaking stool. I said, this is goddamn shame. Right?
Your energy is low, brother.
No, because it was. But
I, the lower vibration.
Oh, my God. It was like I saw. It was so sad. Mm-hmm. I don't know what it is when I see men like that now. And it sounds like I'm freaking self-righteous, pretentious. But
no,
there's something when I see a man stumbling around drunk. Mm-hmm. I think, ooh, like you lost the.
Yeah.
You're not what you were, and you don't know it, and I can see it, and it's sad.
It's almost like saying, man, they got you, man. They got you. Yeah.
That's
very sad.
It is. It's the dark side.
Yeah.
First off, he had flip-flops on. I don't care if we had the beach. You don't wear flip-flops out, dog. I'm just saying.
Glad I didn't wear flip-flops.
That's a G-code.
Today.
No, you can't. No, but men, G-code.
Open toes.
If you can't jump a fence in it, you shouldn't be wearing it outside the house. Okay. Sorry. I digress.
Good.
But you're really, I really love how you're explaining it. That it's like the further you were getting away from the practice, the more complex your life was getting. The more that you were finding yourself relying on this external substance.
I've totally visualized it.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't see it. I didn't want to be in my body at all. And I've always been spiritual and, you know, connected with the energy, loved all the stuff. So, I was in a good place for a little while. And then when I was gone, it all went away. I mean, my faith, my connection with myself. Mm. I mean, it was all of it was gone. I knew it was there, but I wasn't connecting to it. Like I knew it was there, but it wasn't, I couldn't feel it. I couldn't touch it. And it was so far away.
Out of your grasp, not tangible.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Very far away.
Yeah. That really makes sense a lot to me because that's exactly how I felt in, you know, when I was in that state, you know, like I knew that I was still, and the words I would use is I knew I was loved by God.
Yes.
Yeah.
I knew God was like not far.
Right.
But I also knew that like I was not like participating in whatever God was doing. You know what I mean?
Right.
So like, you could see it.
Yeah.
But you wasn't, He wasn't walking over there and jumping in that.
Yeah. But right. There was a point when I felt like I was kind of handed over to,
yes,
you know, and there's a scripture that talks about that, right? Mm-hmm. Hand him over to his sin so that he would find the errors of his way and return. Right. So there was a point in my life where it was like I was handed over to it. Mm-hmm. And that's when it kind of got really dark. And when it got really dark, I was like, ooh, mm-hmm. I don't like this. Because I remember the light too much. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Did you have a similar moment to that or?
Yes, I missed the light. I like how you put it. Like, I missed the light and I would pray. But towards the very end, but I didn't trust, mm-hmm. you know, now when I can find that trust, I feel that peace, right? That calm. But I wasn't trusting anything. But towards the very end, I remember being on my hands and knees in the shower, in front of the toilet, you name it, crying.
Yeah.
Crying out loud to God, I need help. I can't do this. But I didn't. Nothing happened for a while until it did. And I'll never forget, you know, the day that I won't go into detail, but the day that I needed to go get help.
It came to a head.
Things came to a head.
Yeah.
And I remember feeling briefly this huge wave of relief. And I remember praying and thinking, I'm going to get help. I'm safe. I'm going to be safe.
Wow.
And I was still scared. Mm. I struggled. I was not blessed with I don't have any cravings. You know, that wasn't me. But I also know that I was holding on still. I was scared. I didn't want to let go of my best friend, the love
Absolutely,
of my life.
Absolutely, yeah. That's your medicine. I mean, it was like what was getting you through a very overwhelming piece of life.
Right.
Right.
So when the first few months of sobriety, I wasn't drinking, but I wasn't trusting anything, you know, I wasn't
very uncomfortable.
I tell my sponsor, it was like, I was holding on for dear life to like, I picture like a tree or I don't know. It was like, I feel like this visual that I was just holding on. Like I was scared. I was scared.
Yeah.
But until I really started to turn my trust over to God and really do it, not just say I'm doing it, like, yeah, I'm doing it, when I did it.
Yeah, like a practice.
Mm-hmm. Like a practice.
Embodying it, starting to,
exactly.
Live it, yeah.
And, you know, with yoga and recovery, yoga, meditation, all of it teaches us to really be present, right? And be aware of this moment. Mm. And it's helped me translate that into my sobriety to be right now, right here. I'm not drinking. I don't have to think about 10 years from now. I don't know what that,
right.
I don't want to drink, but you know, it helps me take it one day at a time. Mm-hmm. It's drinking with other, with everything.
Yeah. I mean, yeah.
So it's been a really fascinating tool that I'm beyond grateful that I had in my toolbox as I entered into my sobriety.
Especially when it comes to like interpreting the steps.
Yes.
Like, what does this mean?
Yes.
You have that go-to that you, that experience. That's just like, you know, that is where it's a major tool in the comprehension of all that.
And the awareness.
Yeah.
Because when you're aware, let's take the defects, for example, when you're aware and you're diving into some character defects, you see it. You can't unsee it. Mm. Okay. It doesn't mean it's fixed. Mm. Yeah. But for me, I can't unsee that now. And finding that awareness has been a very helpful tool. A little bit uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. I tell my sponsor that, you know, having heightened awareness is a blessing and a curse because sometimes it's just, I don't want to know, but you're learning so much and then you got to do the work.
Well, oh my gosh, I got like four thoughts at one time. The heightened awareness, let's talk about that. Do you think that heightened awareness has always been with you?
Yes.
Since a child?
Yes.
And that so it's almost like this calling or destiny to be embody a spiritual practice.
Yes. And yeah. And it scared me.
Yeah.
It still scares me.
It's
sometimes.
Like a sensitivity to energy. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And walking into a room and going, I would say like I know something mm-hmm. about the room that everyone either doesn't know or is ignoring.
Yeah, and it, you know, it translates into sensitivity, but like I was a little kid that saw ghosts. Well, that's a whole nother topic. But mm-hmm. it was always this heightened sensitivity, this heightened awareness to energetic sources, to mm-hmm. spirituality. And, you know, I think in some ways it scared me and I just wanted to numb that too.
Yeah. And I'll tell you.
Oh, yeah.
Like it's really mainly females that I've interviewed and talked to about this. But I mean, you're probably like the fourth person mm-hmm. who has that kind of mm-hmm. awareness of this energy. And, but I think of my own life and I think I got the same thing too.
I think that sometimes too.
Yeah.
But I just think, you know, just like you said, I think women just know that better.
They're a little more, yeah. I think they're a little more in tune.
I don't think dudes just, we suck at that.
Well,
yeah.
I don't know. I know some pretty in tune, but you know, I do agree. Majority is women, but is it the majority of women or women right. just talking about it? Because men are true. Like, I don't know. You're right.
Like you can't wear flip flops, but you can feel the energy right. in the room, though.
Yeah.
You
know?
But you got them open toes, we're going to have a problem.
So there could be some ego playing in there.
Yeah.
That's it. That's
so right so this energy, so now in choosing to live a life, abstinent from the substances in that way, mm-hmm. right? Now in this practice, how is this your relationship to this energy, to this thing that's what's your relationship with it now?
It's very open. It's very open where I actually have to do grounding practices, you know, because
tell me about that. What do you mean by that?
It's like, so open that it's overwhelming.
For me.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's like, I don't know what to do with it, right? All this, I'm learning this new life without these, you know, things that are dulling my energy. So I've talked with energy healers and, you know, people in that world. I go to an acupuncturist, all kinds of things. And it has been a consensus and I have not told one or the other what each other's saying, but they're saying, you know, you're very open now and you have to also protect your energy. Like if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And that is something I'm working on right now. It is not something I've mastered.
Yeah. Well, I think of like, you know, like David's a counselor, you know, by profession. So all day he's sitting, absorbing energy right? all day. And I think it's like, you got to do something with that.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, and what I've noticed is, when I got home from the beach, I was sad and I was like, I acknowledged the sadness. Mm-hmm. I didn't try to cover it up. I didn't try to pretend it wasn't. I even told my daughter, mm-hmm. I feel sad. Mm-hmm. Like I'm happy I'm home,
right.
but I'm sad that the ocean is far away now.
Right.
Right. So there was an energy shift in me, mm-hmm. right, that I have to be aware of, but it's awareness, but then I have to accept it.
Yes.
I have to accept that this is what it is. Then I can take the right action.
Right.
Right. And that sounds like what you're in this grounding is you're learning to accept this thing that's happening. And now what do you do with it?
Correct. And also, and you can relate, well, we all can relate to this, but as a counselor, I used to take on people's energy. So if somebody next to me was anxious, I'd feel anxious, or they were angry, I'd be like, oh, like uncomfortable. And now I'm learning to not take on other people's energy as well.
Transference.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. But accepting the emotions is huge because sadness is nothing you can do. You just have to feel it.
Right.
You know, and that's so uncomfortable. I feel like, again, something I'm working, but when I'm mad, I feel like I'm more in control. Like, I'd much rather be mad than sad.
Oh, yeah.
I feel like, yes, I'm mad. I got this, you know?
It's because there's a determination that, that's a motivating factor in
anger. I feel powerful. Yeah. I feel like Wonder Woman, but then I'm sad and I just got to let this
pass.
Want
to curl up.
Anger gets, anger gets shit done. Yes. I'll tell you that. I tell you what.
But I, you know, for me, I think, you know, that is very true. I, it's almost, you know, for me, it's impossible, especially, you know, when, you know, I see a lot of clients, but sometimes there's a lot of similarities. They don't know each other, but like the issues are kind of the same or the obstacles are the same. The goals are the same and the process is the same and it gets heavy, you know, because it's like, sometimes it's really deep. So, like for me, when I'm in nature, I can feel like I have, I am purposely out there to like shake that off.
Wow.
Not to forget it, but just to, you know, just to like lighten it up a little bit.
Right.
And then by the time I'm done with all that, when I get back in my car, I'm I feel like I'm ready with a good attitude to receive it again.
Do you look back at the path and like all the trees are dead?
It just gets dark and it's crumbling down.
You're like, this guy can't take walks in this federal park anymore.
Pass you?
Things are just aging.
Well, that's interesting that you said that, and I love that we're like turning the lens on this stuff, right? Let's see it energetically. That you have this call to nature, and you might not even have purposely been doing what you're, because I've never heard you explain it that way, right? But it's like you get into nature, and now nature's like just pulling that, absorbing that.
It's
off of
taken. It's a very like decompression. It's like I could, if I had any like skills in drawing, I could almost draw it the way I feel like it looks. Like how I'm, like the imagery in my head is like you can just see it kind of like, I don't know, in like shadows off of me.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Dimensionally, kind of.
I mean, nature is so healing. I think I can visualize a little bit what you're saying.
So much so that like whenever I like go, when I go there purposely to like do that, I hear everything after that. It's done. It's like I hear the trees blowing. I hear like the animals way more clear. I'm more like, I can, you know, because I'm always with my dogs and my daughter for the most part. But I it's like now I'm tuned into that. It's like I've let all that go. I'm in this moment. And again, it's like I'm recharged. Like I go in there and I'm ready with a good attitude.
Yeah.
Specifically for my job. You know, so it's very helpful to me.
This message has been brought to you by David, the mystic agent.
Go see a tree.
But you're right. I mean, you're not going on, you know, the computer or using, you're being with yourself in nature and being present. And it's awesome.
And so there's some fundamental, like if it's true, right? So there's a fundamental thing in that practice because he is moving. He's in his body. He's out there. And I think there's something, the same thing, like when I'm at the ocean, and those waves are smashing and crashing. I might get into my head, but I'm not like lost in it. I'm not lost in it. Because there's a wave coming and I better figure out what's happening.
Right.
Yeah.
I get that with the ocean.
Oh, man.
Nature. But yes, the ocean for me is so healing.
Yeah. So now how often are you practicing and teaching? And what would you, because I think there's some real key things for a yoga practice and someone in recovery, especially someone who's coming out of, you know, a heavy opioid IV using thing, right? Because so much of IV using is, it's body and mind. Mm-hmm. There is like a insidious connection that's happening.
Yeah.
How can you see people integrating yoga into this and into their recovery?
Where do I begin? So when I was in IOP, it was part of our weekly program. And currently I practice maybe 4 to 5 times a week. but I meditate every day, and that brings me, that gives me space, right? That allow that, but it's not always comfortable, and that's okay. It's not always long, and that's okay. But for somebody new to recovery, it may feel very awkward for them to be in their body, but as they start to work through the practice, I mean, yoga will create a natural dopamine effect to your body.
Yeah.
And, you know, so many, most recovery, well, I don't know most, but a lot of recovery places are incorporating yoga into their program.
Well, the thing is that, but they incorporate it as this, like, you know, once a week.
A drill.
Exactly.
Class.
Yeah. Right.
Right.
For me, just the way you explained it earlier, right? Because one of the hardest things to do when you are encouraging meditation, which that's the thing, you know, hey, you guys meditate. I'm telling you, practice. And everybody's like, yeah. But if it was the third piece, you know what I mean? Like, okay, now, you know, do some yoga.
Start at yoga.
Let's start at yoga.
Right.
You know, get your breathing exercises down and then finish with some meditation. That's different for a person just to say, okay, now I got to sit down and close my eyes.
Right.
You know,
right.
Like now you're working up to it.
That's a hard shift from shooting dope.
I know.
Yeah.
Behind Eric Green.
Yeah.
I had my eyes closed for five years,
man. And I was conscious with my eyes closed.
Just going to say, yeah, you're so far away from your body. The last thing you want to do is feel your body and feel your feelings and all that.
Right.
So starting slow for sure. But I think that somebody new to recovery, you're right. Once a week probably isn't enough, and it should be more adapted into a recovery program. And I think for me, I'll just say based on my experience, because I was removed from yoga for a few years. When I got back, I didn't want to feel my body. I was like, oh gosh, no, I don't even know what's going on. Like, you know, but once I started moving and once I started to create that flow and the, you know, feeling, starting to feel good with it, then you're right. I did start to meditate again and it felt good. But I would highly recommend people that are new to recovery, don't put the pressure to go do an hour every single day. Don't, because that's what we want to do as addicts.
Yes,
we want
right.
to go
for the
to
fix.
The extreme.
Right. Yeah.
At least I do. I want to go like all or nothing.
Right.
All of it right
yes.
away. So just do
buying robes right. and shit and like, you know.
Right. Yeah. And you know, I've been talking with where I went to IOP and how I could help and where I went to detox, how I could help because they reach out. But it's something that needs to be, it's something that needs to evolve in this world, in the recovery world.
Yeah, I agree.
But back to what I was saying, somebody that's new, I mean, there's tons of videos. I don't know. People might struggle doing it at home. Sometimes I do. But even 20 minutes a day or, you know, moving your body a little bit, and then Insight Timer is an app. You can just do a couple minutes a day. Start slow.
Mm-hmm.
And it may be uncomfortable at first, but it is going to... I mean, it has shifted my recovery in so many ways. When I started to do it again, it took me a little bit before I wanted to get in my body again.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. It's like, I know the value of taking a nature walk, but you know, if someone was shooting dope last week, it's hard to be like,
right.
Come on, you want me to take a walk, boy? I'm like,
listen,
yeah.
There's a path over here.
Right. I mean, I got sober and I was like Forrest Gump. I literally was like, I signed up for a half marathon. I'm like, I just couldn't stop running.
Oh, wow.
So I need to slow down a little bit.
Right. So you mentioned like this energy shifting, and I can't help but kind of like reoccurring thinking about this. Like, is there, because there's a corporate, right, where you're in some sort of class and there's several of us all together and we're all doing it and there's some instructors kind of guiding us. Then there's this private kind of discipline of it, right, where you're doing it yourself, maybe from what you've learned in class or on YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
Are there any like one-on-one kind of practicing? Because it sounded to me like when you're moving energy shift and you start to feel an emotion, it sounds like, man, that might be a good time to verbalize what you're feeling and maybe talk through that, because you might be approaching an insight. Is that a part of
Yeah. I mean, that's primarily I do one-on-ones. I mean, I've been working with a lady for, I've been working with many different people one-on-one, but, you know, one lady for about 10 years and saw a huge transformation in her life, not alcoholism or anything, but I think there's a lot of confusion. There's been some people close to me that recently got into yoga and there's been confusion. Like, I'm feeling emotions. What is this? What does this mean? And I, it, you're right. What if they didn't have somebody, they might not feel comfortable telling the instructor that it, with a big group. Like I just started crying. What's going on?
And I'm not coming back here. Right.
And I think that it depends on your personality. For me, I'm shy in a big group, so I'm not going to go in yoga now. I would, but I wouldn't initially just go up to an instructor and say, this is what's going on with me. What's happening.
And so they might not be have the time because there's 10 students in the room. Right.
Right.
So it might be hard for them to give you the attention.
Right.
And so you do this one-on-one.
Yes. I love it.
So it's do you do favorite. It like virtually or.
I can do it virtually. The woman I work with, I go to Buckhead once a week and it's usually on Sundays. And I've seen her kids grow up, get married, have babies, and now their wives come and we have a little family thing of it. And it's beautiful. I've done it for families. I've done it for groups of girls. I mean, there's all kinds of different ways to go about it.
Wow.
But
I didn't even consider any of that. That's awesome. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, even if you get a group of dudes together that, you know, but even just doing a couple one-on-ones and understanding, just getting a little bit of an understanding.
That's probably very important.
You know, and then you can evolve from there.
Yeah. It's kind of like, you know, like, I don't know if you've ever done like a walk and talk with someone, or you like take a walk with somebody, like a nature walk or whatever. Mm-hmm. And the conversations are always so dope. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like we get deep and we have like these really deep conversations because we're doing a thing.
Yeah.
Which I always say, like, what got me into meditation was walking meditation, because my brain, my ego brain, is paying attention to move the leg, move the arm. Mm. Is that a snake? Is that a bird? What's happening here? You know what I mean? What's that smell? What's that sound? So while that guy's busy doing all that, then the rest of me can chill out.
Yeah.
And I can actually kind of center myself. And so that's why when we were talking about it, I thought, wow, that could be what a powerful therapeutic tool for somebody to begin moving, shifting energy, and then to be able to immediately verbalize that and release that.
Yes. Yeah. And that is actually a great meditation, finding that awareness, sometimes sitting there guiding somebody or, you know, on your own, like you did in nature, but let's say there's cars driving by or all these distractions, right?
Yeah.
Bring awareness to them.
Yeah.
Listen to them. Notice them.
Mm-hmm.
Move on to the next noise. Okay, I'm feeling sad. Okay. You're okay.
Yeah.
Nothing's happening. You're just feeling sad. Yeah. Like acknowledging and just breathing through that. And, you know, breath work's a whole nother aspect of it. But sometimes that awareness of what's going on, acknowledging it.
Because typically you're trying to block it to keep it moving. Like,
you block out the
car noise.
I got to go to work. I got to pay push these bills. The sadness. I can't feel these feelings. I got shit to do.
The way I learned to meditate was through, you know, my teacher gave me a mantra that was designed specifically for me. So he told it to me. And we all want to think like meditation is no thoughts, only bliss and lovely, lovely, you know, feelings, but it's actually cleaning house, right? It's these things that are coming up that we're always too busy. And then when we sit still, it's like, oh, okay, now all this stuff is coming up. What do I do with this? And, you know, the way I learned to meditate was a mantra. So we start, you know, in your head, you're doing the mantra quietly, silently, thoughts come up. Acknowledge it, try to let it go, slowly come back to the mantra. Try to keep it effortless. It's a practice. It's not like you master that right away. But acknowledging it, let it come up, and then try to release it, bring it back to the mantra. And I've taken that off of my meditation. Like especially as alcoholics, we obsess, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I'm going to obsess about this. I'm going to feed this. And instead of feeding it, coming back to everything's okay. I trust God. I give this to God. God's my higher power. Okay. So whatever that is for anybody else, but that is my mantra off of my meditation or my mat, right? So not feeding this craziness, this wolf. I call it the wolf. Don't feed the wolf and go back to the healing mantra, but it's going to still come.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, yeah, big time.
So if someone wanted to get in contact with you, let's say they heard this and they're like, how do I connect? How would they get more information on you?
So right now I just do email and phone. I had a website.
Uh-huh. You ain't got an IG handle?
But I'm old school.
Come on,
I'm
man.
A hippie at heart, okay?
You're like right to P.O. Box 774.
The bird will land on your...
Be on the lookout for a little bluebird.
The dove right. will land yeah. at 12.
I mean, I know I am on Instagram and Facebook, but... I mean,
well, they can reach out. So if someone, yes. if you're listening to this, yeah. reach out to Most High Show, contact at the Most High Show, and we will connect you.
There you go.
And with Katie, and obviously somebody who sounds like would be well qualified to
sure,
help somebody
man.
To learn this practice. And especially if you're in recovery, mm-hmm. that you can help someone to integrate that into their recovery. Yeah. Is there anything that we're leaving out before we close? Anything you wanted to say as you were preparing?
I just think that I realized when I was thinking about just some of the things we talked about before the podcast, how much my passion now lies in yoga, obviously. The two passions in my life are recovery and yoga, mm. right? They bring me to what I think can be my best self. And I think that is something that I would love to give that gift and to others that are in recovery, because it is so healing and it is a practice. But I think, especially with the guys and the ego and I'm not good at it and all these things,
yeah.
you know, just being open to it. I really pray people can be open to it.
Yeah.
Well, it's about being open-minded and willing, right?
Mm-hmm. Right. So in closing, so I have the last question, right? Which okay. was, we kind of danced around it earlier.
Okay.
It was so interesting that I saw this clip before we did this and we were gearing up for the show. But it was like, someone was like, some bishop guy, you know, priestly guy. He's like, you know, we forbid Christians to practice yoga because you're praying to a Hindu mm-hmm. god, and mm-hmm. and so you're worshiping a false idol or whatever like that. Mm-hmm. How would you address that? Somebody who has that concern,
right?
Right. How could you speak to that to kind of disarm them a little bit and give them the opportunity that they might could practice this with their own relationship with their own higher power?
Well, my mom had that concern. My family had that concern. She's like, oh, you're practicing yoga in a Buddhist temple. Are you Buddhist? What's going on, Katie?
Yeah.
And there's nothing wrong with being, but she was just worried that I was going to veer from the religion that I grew up with. Right. And for me, I've not once been influenced by anybody in the yoga community to have a specific religion. If anything, I find it a more open-minded place. We don't pray in yoga unless you're, you know, I pray personally in yoga. Mm. It's a very personal practice. If you're religious, you have spiritual beliefs, that can be in your personal practice. It is not something that people force you to do. That is a misconception.
Yeah.
I can't speak for every country in the world, but I can only speak from experience.
Yeah, right. Yeah, so if I want to be stretching with Jesus.
You stretch with Jesus.
I can stretch with Jesus.
I stretch with Jesus.
Yeah.
Well, I think the big thing is it's like not, you know, I think the misconception lies that you are like subconsciously worshiping another God.
right?
Mm-hmm. You know, then you know, where rather than the one you stay to believe in,
right?
And I just, you know, I don't. I'm not trying to be judgmental about that, but I just don't. I mean, it's just like you said,
right?
You know, it's about opening up yourself. You know, getting better, getting well, you know, finding these different points of energy in yourself, finding yourself.
Right.
Being aware, being mindful.
What's a misconception of worship, I think, because worship is what we've been talking. This has been coming up this whole conversation, which is this is a practice. This is an integration into our life.
Yeah.
That's what worship is, right?
Right.
And I think a fundamental expression of Christianity has become worship is singing and bowing down. Mm-hmm. And maybe that's a part of it, but really an act of work of worship is an integration of your life. Right?
Yeah.
And so if whatever you're doing, you're bringing it into what your already kind of system is, it's going to enhance. At least that's been my experience. And as I've learned to implement other religious practices into my life, it's only brought me closer to Christ consciousness.
Yes.
Not further away.
Correct.
My recovery life, like that's another thing.
Yeah.
You know, you go to a meeting now, they're like, don't say that. It's like, man, this is the thing that like got me closer to my higher power.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, I don't know. It's really funny how we can put all these enhancers to our spiritual life and turn them into these things that we're saying, oh, that's blocking you from becoming, you know, closer to God.
Yes. What? Yes.
Man, I don't drink anymore, bro.
I know.
You know what I'm saying? Like, I think that's helpful.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, there's Sanskrit words, there's chants we do, but if you break down what they mean, for one, you know, one is loka samasta suki no bhavantu, right? May all beings be happy and free. That's what that means. It doesn't mean I pray to this one. It's not about prayer. There are words, just like, you know, you would say a Spanish word. Doesn't mean you're Spanish or whatever.
So say that thing again.
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah.
Do that again.
Loka samasta suki no bhavantu.
Right.
All so that
and have a good night, folks. So that,
but there's you can go to a kirtan. You know, there's chants and things like that. And, you know, it doesn't make you.
I want to learn
Hindu.
That. Right.
You know.
Right. No, but if we were in Ethiopia right now and somebody said, you know, say Jesus is your Lord and Savior, it's not going to, you know what I mean? It's going to have a similar tone to it. It's meaning we're not going to understand the language, man. Mm. We're just not going to understand it. That doesn't mean, you know, we're going after a whole different thing here.
Yeah. I mean, for me, yoga, recovery, peeling the onion through recovery and peeling the onion through yoga and being more in tune has only made me more open to my relationship, my spiritual relationship. And
that should be your book.
What's that?
Peeling your onion through yoga.
I do use that a lot. Peeling my onion.
It's a good title.
You can call it like onion soup.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, this has been amazing. And yes, I'm hoping that we can work together and make something happen.
Yeah. Thank you.
Try to cultivate some opportunities for some, you know, for some people. We'd be out there at the bluff,
man,
doing some yoga, you know,
or
what I'm
or just like, you know, coming through that and doing that process at the beginning of my IOP, before we check in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, that would be amazing.
Yeah. You ever been to like a meeting that's like where you meditate before?
Grant was always telling me him and I guess Mitchell used to go.
There's this one. What's that? Shambhala. And so you meditate for like 15, 20 minutes before you do the sharing portion of the meeting.
Oh, wait.
Monday nights. And it is the sharing. Paige actually is one of the persons. She was really instrumental in that group. But the sharing afterwards is so much.
I know. I'm not going to imagine.
Because you've meditated.
Yeah.
You're kind of like settled in.
I have been to one. It was Buddhist based.
Yes.
Yeah. But, it's very
the
universal.
The Dharma recovery.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was cool.
Yeah. Dharma recovery is another one. So there's a solution, right?
That's and right. Look at that options, folks.
Yeah, if we got to move the energy with stretches, you know, if you got to sit still, if you got to take a walk, if you got to call someone, look, just we want you to stop dying. All right. And that's what we're here for. We want to help you to once you stop dying, we want to help you design a life that's worth staying sober for. It's worth living.
That's right.
And we need you to survive. So thank you for listening to the Most High Show. And we'll be back again soon. Thank you, Katie. Thank you, Kale.
Yes, thank you so much. It's excellent. Fun.
Thank you, DJ C. And thank you, Leslie, for quality control. Peace.
Why Most High Media? Because I don't have the answers. Other people do. And learning from the experiences, the stories, the perspectives, seeing people who have been through the darkest of circumstances and then have come out of it on the other side and have lived extremely exciting, fulfilling lives and tapped into a way of being and a way of living, but it's actually real and obtainable. That's why.